first of all, thank everybody for coming. Mm-hmm. Our goal for this evening is to kind of share the presentation. Rabbi Aaron Kraft, if you do not know, he is the Rosh Chabura of our YU Torah Mitzion Kolo. Do you make challah at home?
I actually do.
You make the challah at home?
And you make the Ashkenazi one.
I only know how to make Ashkenazi.
Yeah, we're only
we'll forgive you.
Ashkenazi over here. And for those who I haven't met, my name is Ruvain Brand, and as the Rosh Kolo of our YU Torah Mitzion Kolo, I also make challah at home, among other things. So our goal tonight is going to be to enjoy challah. We'll probably sit here for a little bit, but then we might make our way over to some crock pot or the oven to be able to kind of talk about some of the practical elements that we're focusing on tonight, which has to do with using challah as a way of thinking about how we heat food on Shabbos. And this was a topic that Chana just stepped out. This is something that was suggested as a good opportunity to kind of refresh our memory. Different people have different practices. This is not meant to be, you know, the only way to do things. First of all, Sfardim are going to find it different than what we're going to be presenting tonight. What we're presenting tonight is primarily for Ashkenazim. There are slight differences.
I practice everything.
Okay, good.
I don't discriminate.
But you only eat the Sfardi, but...
No, I eat everything. I eat everything. I cook everything. I eat everything.
I don't cook.
I even make gefilte fish. I mean, you know, how far can you go?
That's very far. So the idea is to talk about some of these. You know, obviously, we could set up really a whole course about food, heating food on Shabbos, I guess. But I think we're going to focus on...
More chairs.
Okay. Pause. But the main theme is different aspects of heating. So we'll move from Friday afternoon into Shabbos. Sounds good?
Yes.
So far. Okay.
All right, let's go for it.
Yeah.
So when we think about Shabbos and cooking on Shabbos, so we know that there is a prohibition of cooking on Shabbos per se, but normally, even though we're probably thinking a lot about preparing for Shabbos during the week before Shabbos, right? Hopefully we're not leaving it to the very last minute, something on our minds earlier. We're normally not thinking in terms of, well, maybe there are things that I can't do prior to Shabbos, right? Normally I think the things I can't do happen on Shabbos. But that would be true on the level of the Torah, the Doraisa level. From the Torah's perspective, that's true. We can only violate cooking on Shabbos if it's actually Shabbos. But Chazal were very wise, and maybe they had Nevuah and they saw what it looks like in my house on Friday afternoon. And they realized that maybe people, on occasion, and maybe with some chulent, perhaps, wait till the very last minute to start making the chulent. And what's going to happen? So I'm going to make the chulent on Friday afternoon. I'm going to put everything together, put it on the crock pot, and everything's going to be sitting there. It's going to be ready to go. And I'm going to put it on the fire. And when Shabbos starts, is the chulent going to be ready? Absolutely not. So now, someone who likes to eat a lot of chulent, like myself, might find myself on Friday nights looking at my chulent pot and wanting to give it a little bit of a taste after my wife goes to sleep so she wouldn't yell at me. And it's not going to be ready. So what am I going to do, perhaps? I'm going to try and maybe play around with the flame, right? I'm going to try and maybe stoke the coals or raise the flames or try and play around in such a way to speed up this process to get the chulent to cook faster. So Chazal, our sages, they sort of saw that this could be a potential problem, and they said, so wait a second, maybe we have to, on a rabbinic level, limit to a certain degree what is appropriate to do before Shabbos as well. Maybe even before Shabbos, we already have to think about, well, is it okay to leave something that's not yet cooked on the flame if it's not going to be ready before Shabbos? So because of this concern that we might come to stoke the coals or to try and make the flame higher, our rabbis instituted that under certain circumstances, things that are not cooked should not be left on the flame from before Shabbos, even going into Shabbos, even though I'm not actually doing anything on Shabbos, but there's a potential that I might stoke the coals. Now, stoking the coals wouldn't be a prohibition of cooking per se, because everything's already set up, but it could be a problem, potentially, of kindling a new flame or of playing around with the flame that already exists. So because of that concern, which Chazal referred to, our sages referred to as Shema Yechate Begachom, that maybe you'll stoke the coals, so therefore raw foods or foods that are not fully cooked should not be left on the flame on Shabbos, so there's this rabbinic injunction to make sure that things that we don't leave things that are not fully cooked going into Shabbos. So now, obviously, we have to take a step back here and figure out, well, when does this apply, when does this not apply? Because probably many of us who make cholent realize that we do put our cholents up on Friday afternoon, and by Shabbos it's not yet cooked, but it's still okay. So why is it okay? What, you know, what are the circumstances of this halacha? So Chazal already, in the Gemara already tells us that, well, you can solve this problem. How can we solve the problem that maybe someone's going to come to stoke the coals? So how could we potentially solve the problem? Well, if we set up a scenario where it would be difficult to stoke the coals, or we would be reminded, right, we'd have some sort of reminder that we're not allowed to start playing around with the flame, right, even in, with a system that's already set up, we're not allowed to start playing around with it. So if we could have such a system, so then we wouldn't be concerned that someone's going to come to stoke the coals. So what is that? What the Talmud tells us, what, how do we do such a thing? So the Talmud tells us there are two ways of doing it. One way of doing it is if you have a system that provides heat that doesn't actually have coals inside. If there are no coals inside, it's just heat that was from before Shabbos that was there, and the coals have been removed, so then you don't have, then you don't, you're not worried about someone stoking the coals. So that's not so practical for our purposes, because we don't usually cook our food on flames that are coming out of coals. But the other possibility is if we cover up the heating system, right? If we cover up the coals, so then I can't, or I'll be reminded not to go and play around with the coals. I'll be reminded not to stoke them. So this element is something that does sort of make its way into our practice, right? So if I have, you know, so if I have a fire, I'm able to cover it up to prevent myself from perhaps playing around with this fire on Shabbos with the food that's sitting on top of it. So that's sort of just like the general principle, what our sages were concerned about, and the potential way to solve that problem, which is to cover up the flame. So we cover up the flame so that we don't have that concern that I'm going to go ahead and play around with the fire on Shabbos. So now the question is, well, wait a second, what does this apply to? When do we have to cover up the flame? When do we not have to cover up the flame? How do we cover up the flame? So to answer that question, we just have to take a quick step back. And this is really the subject of debate in the Talmud between the Chachamim, the general sages, and someone named Hananya. So Hananya, the Chachamim said, listen, we're very concerned. The only way you can leave something on a flame from before Shabbos, going into the Shabbos, without having this concern of maybe stoking the coals, is either you cover it up or take the coals out. And the only time you do not have to cover up your flame is if the item is fully cooked. If the item is fully cooked from before Shabbos, so then obviously we're not going to be concerned that you're going to do anything on Shabbos. If it's fully cooked, so then you're okay. They just make another point is that it should be fully cooked, and if you cook it for too long, it'll get worse. So then we're not concerned at all that you're going to try and speed up the process. Hananiah says, no, you don't have to be that concerned. You can get away with not covering your flame, even if the item's not fully cooked, as long as it's partially cooked. So what's the threshold for partially cooked? So the threshold that we'll use, and this is something that will come up again and again, hopefully throughout tonight's presentation, is a shear or a measurement of cooking something that is actually based on our friendly bandits, Ben Drusai. The Gemara talks about someone who is a bandit, so he's always on the run. So the Gemara talks about, well, if you're always on the run, so obviously you don't have time to let your food cook fully. So as long as it's cooked enough for this bandit to be comfortable eating it when he's on the run, so that's enough to be considered cooked for the purposes of this halacha, of this law, and therefore if it's cooked to the what's called ma'achal ben drusai, which is normally, according to the mainstream decision, is one-third of the way cooked. If it's one-third of the way cooked, it's a little bit of a debate if it has to be one-third cooked or half-cooked, but if it's one-third of the way cooked when Shabbos starts, so then already that's cooked enough that if you were really stuck, you could potentially eat it, and therefore we're not going to be concerned about you playing around with the flame or stoking the coals, and you could leave it on from before Shabbos as long as done. So if I make my cholent at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it has a few hours before Shabbos starts, so by Shabbos it's already partially cooked, so I can put it on any sort of flame. I don't have to cover it. I don't have to take any precautions according to the rule of Hananya. And now Hananya is the way, we mentioned that most of tonight is going to be Ashkenazi custom, so Hananya is the position that's accepted by the Rama, by the Rav Moshe Isserles, who is the posek, who is generally the decisor for Ashkenazi custom. So he fundamentally says that that's how we hold. As long as it's at least a third cooked when Shabbos starts, so then you don't have to be worried about it. You don't even have to cover anything up. Now, later poskim have suggested that really in the ideal situation, unless something is fully cooked, it's a good idea to still cover up the flame, but it's not 100% necessary if there's no way of covering it up. It's permissible as long as it's ma'achal ben drusai, as long as a third of the way cooked. So, I don't know, should I take a step over and just look at some of the different, I think we have a few setups over here, just to show.
And Leo Bleff, too, you want that also?
Yeah, so I see it's over there, so just to show.
I'm going to Bleff, but I'm going to Bleff. You guys, everything in your crowd around the island, if you want to see,
great. So if we look over here, so for example, there's two classic functions of trolling. So you've got your crock pot situation. So here you've got a crock pot. So if you would put your trolling pot in this crock pot, here would be the eating source. So if the trolling is not a third of the way cooked before Shabbos, so how would you cover it up? So if you would line the crock pot with some foil, so you line the crock pot with foil, so that would cover up the flame, and then you put your trolling inside, and that would be considered that it was the heating source was covered, so there would be no concern that you stoke. Now, because in modern times, we're not talking about stoking the coals, and how do we adjust flames? Because I can tell them about the knobs, right? You're talking about the adjustables.
Know that we have the thing.
Oh, so here's the Shabbos one. This is exactly what we're about to talk about. So here, if you cover up the heating source with the foil on the inside,
It may depend on the crock pot. Some crock pots have a heating source only in the bottom. Some crock pots have heating coils in the sides, and then it would probably be recommended
to cover
the foil also on the side.
And because nowadays, when we talk about heating up or creating a larger fire, we don't stoke coals. You don't have to actually touch the fire. How do we adjust our flames? With knobs. So many poskim, many of our halachic authorities recommend that it's also advisable or preferable to also cover up the knob, because that's really the way that we're going to indicate or remind ourselves that we're not allowed to adjust the fire. So that would be, this is a very classic setup for making cholent. You also have the bluff situation where you have the flame underneath the metal bar over here, and the flame is underneath here, so the flame itself is covered. And then if you would have your whatever pots or whatever is being cooked on the flame, so it might also be advisable to put some sort of covering on the knobs themselves to make sure that we don't make a mistake or come to think and adjust the flames that way. So are there any questions in terms of the...
Yes. What if you do it in the oven?
So if you do it in the oven, it's a great question. So if you're Ashkenazi, so you have the potential permissibility in the sense that as long as a third of the way cooked, so then you don't even have to get into this discussion at all one third of the way cooked. Then there's no problem at all because the Ashkenazim accepts Hananias. If it's cooked fully before, then for sure, even according to the more strict opinion, then you don't have to worry. although cholent might be one of these things that the more it cooks, the better. So according to the strict opinion, you might have to worry. So there are two. There are really two options. One option is to actually line inside of the oven, which I've actually seen postgame say. So you can line the inside of the oven to cover it.
You can buy. There are such things as an insert,
like an insert into the oven
that's like a box that sits inside the oven,
and that way it's covered. It would be enclosed in the oven. That would be
the housing.
Exactly. There is another suggestion that's made because there's when it comes to ovens, it's more difficult to stoke the coals because you would have to open it first. So the Gemara actually talks about how if you seal your oven with tar on the outside, which would make it a little bit more difficult to open up, so then you wouldn't come to stoke the coals, and that would be a good suggestion. So now we're not going to seal our ovens with tar, but if you have your... Where's the oven over here? This is right. Okay, so the oven is controlled here. So if you have this oven, so if you would put, instead of just like covering this with foil, but maybe if you would take a piece of cardboard or something and tape it on, where you would actually have to remove it in order to adjust.
Well, my oven.
Or if you have the button, if you have an electric oven with buttons, you could just kind of put a piece of paper on it.
No, I turn it off and you don't see the buttons, the whole thing.
Or if you have some sort of cover that you'd actually have to remove,
yes.
So then that would be the equivalent of sort of like you'd have to actually remove something in order to adjust it, so that might be the equivalent of sort of putting a tar around.
If it's programmed into a Shabbos mode, let's say that's computer programmed into the Shabbos mode, then does that count for locking out the controls, or you still want a second layer?
Interesting. I mean, the Shabbos, that would actually probably count as locking out the controls, because you would have to undo the Shabbos mode in order to use the oven, in which case, the point... anything that would be done that would require some sort of, some sort of action, that it would not be your normal course of just, you know, touching the buttons with ease. Anything that requires a step above and beyond the normal, just pressing the buttons to change it, that would be enough of a preventative measure, or what the Gemara calls, like, it would be a little bit of a hassle to change the temperature. So that would be enough. For that instance, if you put it in the oven. Any extra step, exactly.
There is an extra step in some ovens, which is the one I have. In addition to the Shabbat mode, that is like a stainless steel thing that comes down, and you can't see anything. You don't see Shabbat, right. You don't see anything.
So maybe you have to tape
that's
it.
That's more like the covering, right. Exactly. It's more like the covering, less like what he's referring to now, which is an additional step more than just removing the cover. It would have to be something more substantive.
So is it required to still have like a box in the oven in addition to that?
No, these are two separate options. Okay. One option is to actually cover up the heating source, inside the oven. The other option is to make it that there's an extra step that would be required to change it.
Okay, so here's my question. So some of the instructions that I read said, like, let's say you have the oven and you have stuff you want to eat Friday night. Okay, so like, let's say the soup's in the oven. Okay, so you're going to open it, you're going to take it out. If your chont was in a foil pan in the oven, if you open the door, can you still leave the chont until tomorrow? Or that's absolutely
so. That's a debate.
Not okay?
That's a debate. As we'll mention a little bit, we're going to talk about Shabbos mode ovens. There are some who are stringent about them, which is it's a totally separate question, but it's a related question, because what's going to happen is, when you, let's say, you have your soup in the oven and the chont in the oven. So the second that I won't burn myself, will I?
Nothing's on.
Okay. So the second that I open the oven, assuming that the light doesn't go on, when I open the oven, if it's not Sabbath mode for a second, even if it is Sabbath mode, but it's easier if it's not, there's a temperature gauge in here somewhere, right? There's a thermostat. When I open the oven, cold air comes in, and that is going to tip off, right? It's going to trigger the thermostat to add heat into the oven. Now, the heat that is adding into the oven, I want that heat to be in the oven. Why? Because my chalent pot is still in there. So there are many who are concerned, I'm not speaking for everyone, but there are many who are concerned that once you open the oven once, now that the hot air is out, when I go like this, by doing that, I am now telling the system to start kicking on the heat to heat my chalent pot.
Right, but that's not Shabbos mode. Because on Shabbos mode, it doesn't respond to you opening the oven door. It just, every 20 minutes, it just shoots out.
So you'll see that when it comes to Shabbos mode, this I Xeroxed for you later.
The same principle works on the refrigerator.
That's correct.
Even though it's on Shabbat mode when
correct.
You open.
The difference is, there are several differences. The difference here, primarily, is that when you're talking about a flame, so that's a potential biblical restriction, whereas very often in the refrigerators, even when you're dealing with compressors, those are oftentimes going to be rabbinic. Here you're talking about actually cooking the food that's still in there, in the case of the chalent, if it's not 100% cooked, versus in the case of the refrigerator, just keeping the fridge closed. The same thing is relevant, let's say, to, opening the door of your house. You open the door of the house, they are lenient, even though you have, let's say, in the wintertime, you let the cold air in, so there are many reasons to be lenient. That's why we're lenient about the fridge. So some might make the same case for the oven, but others are more strict in the oven because of the fact that you're actually dealing with fire and you may be cooking. So as we'll see in a little bit, the oven that is the originators of the Sabbath mode, which is the Star King Baltimore, they say to only open and close the door without leaving food in it afterwards. What you're suggesting is actually that's the recommendation of the Star King. I Xeroxed it. We'll get to it later. Okay? One other item. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we're...
If you have another Jew around, can they do some? They cannot?
So generally speaking, it's not just prohibited for us to do malacha, to do work on Shabbos. It's also prohibited to ask non-Jews to do malacha for us on Shabbos. So now, there are extenuating circumstances in which that is sometimes permitted. Sometimes there's a reason for a mitzvah. Sometimes there's an absolute disaster on your hands in terms of financial implication of something. You know, something is burnt, you have not enough food for your guests. So then it depends on what the nature of the prohibition is. If it's a biblical prohibition, Dr. Dopkin always wants to get in the pictures. Did you notice that? He's a very photogenic guy. I see that. So it's a very complex question, and very often it depends on the nature of the prohibition, if it's rabbinic or biblical. If it's rabbinic, there's much more room to be lenient. If it's biblical, there's a greater concern.
So like turning lights off. And stuff like that.
So it depends what kind of light bulb you have. So this kind of light bulb, for example, if you look in here, there's a filament in there that burns. When you click on the light switch, that actually has a burning coil. That would be a biblical violation. So it would be very unlikely.
But they didn't have lights in the Bibles.
That's correct. So 100 years ago, there was a great rabbinic luminary in Vilna. His name was Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, who says that if you look at the tiny filament and you click it on, which is the light switch that turns it on, look at that. What's happening is actually, in an incandescent light bulb, that tiny coil, the filament, is actually so hot that it's burning. It's red hot, which is what's causing the light. So an incandescent light bulb, that's real fire. Therefore, let's say on a Saturday night, if you wanted to make Havdalah, you could, according to many opinions, you could say Bori Me'ori Ha'esh on that. Friday night, if you don't have Shabbos candles, you turn off the lights, you say the bracha, and you turn them on, your Yotze Shabbos candles with this. Sometimes you go to a hotel.
And they won't let you light candles?
They won't let you light candles. You know what you bring? You bring the old school night lights. You say the bracha, and you click on the night light, your Yotze Shabbos candles, because it's absolute fire. That's biblical Havara. It's a great trick.
Because you can't light candles in the hospital.
Exactly. So you take night lights and you use them.
Yeah.
So one. Yeah. So LEDs are rabbinic. And therefore, when you're in a situation of need, so in that case, you may be more lenient in terms of asking a non-Jew. Let's say somebody is sick, not deathly ill. If they're deathly ill, you rush to the hospital, you drive, you do whatever is necessary. It's not, they're not deathly ill, they're very uncomfortable, they're sick. So you have a chole, someone who's ill, and you have a non-Jew. You can ask them, you know, please turn out the light. It's very, you know, turning out is different, or turn it on. They're very uncomfortable. So because it's an LED light, that's a rabbinic enactment. Asking a non-Jew is also rabbinic, so that's what we call shvus, rabbinic. With another rabbinic, it would be permitted for an ill person. So that would be a big distinction between one of these kind of light bulbs and an LED light. So it's good to know. Let's say you're in a situation, you're in somebody's house and you notice that they have an alarm system that kicks on a light every time you walk into the kitchen. So you start thinking in your mind, wait a second, is it a problem for me to go in the kitchen? It kicks on the lights. It'll depend what kind of light bulb it is. Is it incandescent? Is it? There are also two kinds of fluorescent bulbs. Some have little like sparks.
They have starters,
so that would be biblical as opposed to. So these are more than we could talk about tonight. We're going to have to stay focused on the food.
But I have something to add. There was a rabbanit I was talking to a few weeks ago, and she said that they have a cleaning lady.
Okay.
And then she asked her husband, Chaim, can I ask your Rebbe to turn on the lights? And he says, no, you cannot. And then the cleaning lady.
Okay.
Goes,
that's a separate question.
Yeah, but what if you have somebody that, a non-Jew that's in your house, but knows all the rules?
Right.
And they can go, I mean, you never have to ask them.
So that would be a potential different problem, which is that if a non-Jew does an activity for you, then the benefit of that may be restricted also, because they're doing it specifically for you, even if you didn't ask them. So that's a whole separate category. Okay, so here's one more example for the chalent, and this is a very important exception. So let's say you are Sephardic, or you don't have a situation and where you're going to be able to cover the knobs, and you want to put the chalent in the oven. But the problem is you don't have a box. Hello. You don't have a box where you're able to create a blech inside your oven. So what are you going to do? You're really in a pickle here. So here is a trick that the Talmud says. Well, the whole point, Rabbi Kraft made the point before, which was that the whole concern is it's going to be Friday night, you're sitting down to the Shabbos meal, and your chalent's not ready, so you're going to raise the flame, so you'll hasten the cooking process. But let's say it's right before Shabbos, and I put the chalent in and it's completely raw. Is there any chance that I'm going to properly cook a chalent right before Shabbos in 45 minutes? Even if it's on 500, even if it's on 550, is it possible?
In the microwave.
In an that would be pretty nasty. In an oven.
The beans are the problem. I don't think it's maybe
in an oven. Yeah. It's impossible. So the Talmud says that's your out. Sometimes you're stuck Friday afternoons. The Talmud says, you know what you should do? You should do the opposite. Don't put the chalent in until the last second when it's totally raw. Because then, if it's totally raw, in your mind, you're thinking, you know what? We're obviously not serving chalent tonight. We're going to serve it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's no problem. Therefore, there's not even a requirement. Let's say you're somewhere and you don't have tinfoil. All you have is a crock pot. You don't have any tinfoil. So you're going to have a problem if you want to be concerned, especially, let's say it's not even a third cooked yet. If it's not even a third cooked, then you have a real problem. You need the tinfoil. You need to cover it. So you know what you say? You know what? Forget it. I'm not going to put it on an hour before Shabbos, and then it's going to be in this, you know, questionable stage. I don't have the tinfoil. I'm going to wait till the last second. Or even better, I'm going to take a piece of meat. Everything else I can start before. I'm going to take one piece of meat and stick it in the chalent. And that's going to remind me. It says, you know what? The chalent is not for tonight. It's for tomorrow. So that would be another way of dealing with it if you don't have the ability to have a blech or to cover your fire. All right? All right, let's go sit down.
Then
you're allowed to leave it on even without any covering. Let's keep rolling.
Okay.
Next step.
Great. So now that we've talked about the things that we have to think about from before Shabbos, so now let's start. Now it is Shabbos. So now we're going to start just to define just a couple, two more terms quickly in terms of going forward, what's going to be important, and then we'll cover the things that have to do with on Shabbos considerations. Okay. So now we're actually talking about bishul proper. We're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Before, we're talking about the prohibition of potentially kindling a flame or heating something, you know, raising the heat. Now we're talking about what is the definition of cooking itself. When we say that it's forbidden to cook, what does that mean? So in halacha, cooking is the use of heat to qualitatively affect a change in the food item itself, using heat to qualitatively affect the food itself. So when it comes to this question of cooking, so we've got two categories that we really need to keep straight. We've got foods that are called yavesh, they're dry foods, solid foods, and we also have liquid foods. So when it comes to solid foods, what is the definition? What is the definition of cooking? Well, you can cook something fully, right? That's when it's fully cooked. And then we already mentioned that you could cook something partially ma'achal ben drusai. So the Torah says you're not allowed to cook something at all. You're not allowed to cook it partially, not to ma'achal ben drusai, and you're not allowed to cook it fully. The rabbis came along and said, even if you're going to just cook it for 3 seconds, it's not even going to get a third cooked. The rabbi said, you know what? Don't even do that, because you might forget to take it off the flame and it might continue to cook further. The most important thing to keep in mind when we're dealing with solid foods, though, is that once something is fully cooked, once you have a solid food that is fully cooked, a piece of chicken, it is totally cooked, so then you cannot cook it again, right? The concept is ein bishul achar bishul. When it comes to solid foods, once it's cooked, you can't do anything else, right? The change has already been affected. So that's solid foods.
Well, what if you're going from chicken's been done, but it's now cold, and you want to serve
So that's what we're going to get to. That's what we're setting up the background for right now. Great question. So that's solid foods. When it comes to liquid foods, so you have the same problem. You cannot heat up liquid. So what do we say is called cooking for liquid? Well, if it boils, that's called cooking. That's the equivalent of sort of fully cooked. But the Gemara says that even if it's not fully boiling, it's just very hot. So hot that if you would touch it, you would jump back quickly. It would burn. So that's already the point at which it's considered to have reached its first minimal level of cooking. So again, that would be the point where the Torah says it's prohibited. But there's an important distinction in that liquids are different than solids, because it's not really true per se that you can't cook a liquid twice, right? If the definition of cooking a liquid is getting it to this temperature of Yad Sol Let Us Bo, where you'll jump back if it hits you, it'll burn, or to boiling, so when it cools down, so it's back to ground zero, you can just do the same thing again. So when it comes, at least according to Ashkenazi halacha, there is a concept that we refer to as bishul achar bishul, that a liquid, once it has been cooled down, can be cooked again, and therefore the violation of cooking on Shabbos would continue to apply to a liquid. So that's sort of the important background for the questions that...
So that means no warming up liquids on Shabbat. Like,
well, that's what we'll get to right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about reheating things on Shabbos. So there are three main considerations we talk about reheating things on Shabbos. So the first one is what Rabbi Kraft just mentioned, which is actually cooking something. If you take something that's not 100% cooked and you continue to cook it on Shabbos by putting it on the stove, so that's obviously a problem. So the first thing we always need to think about is, when I'm putting something on the stove, am I now cooking the thing? That's the first thing. The second thing is that there is the concern that we mentioned before, that when I put it on the stove, or I put it in the oven, maybe, let's say it's an hour before my guests are coming, maybe I want to get it hot, so I'm going to, again, adjust the heat source. So that's the second concern, right? Here I am, I'm getting my food ready Shabbos morning, and I put my hot, you know, I want to heat up this food. Right now, you said chicken. I have a piece of schnitzel. It's very dry. It's definitely fully cooked. But even if it's fully cooked, I want it to be hot. So let's say I put it in a surface where, and I check it a half hour later, it's not really getting hot. So I may, even not intentionally, inadvertently raise the heat source because I want to get my chicken hotter. That's the second potential thing. What's that?
I said you would not.
Well, if I was stressed out and I wasn't paying attention, maybe I would. And then here's the third possibility. The third possibility is the rabbi said, wait a second. Let's say you have here somebody is, let's say you have a squatter in the Avner's backyard. Imagine you had this on Shabbos and they were just spying on you as you were preparing Shabbos morning. They didn't know what you were doing. They just know you've talked about, you know, the laws of kashrus. They know that you've come on this journey. They're like, okay, I need to find out what to do on Shabbos. So, you know, you have Gladys Kravitz next door with binoculars who's looking into your kitchen on Shabbos morning.
You're too young to know about that.
Well, I have gray hair. So she's spying on you in your kitchen, but she doesn't speak to you. She doesn't know what you're doing, except all she sees is what's happening. And she sees you take a plate of food and stick it in the oven. So she's thinking to herself, it looks like you're cooking on Shabbos. So you're not cooking on Shabbos for whatever reason. You know what you're doing is permitted. But the person outside, they say that's a problem. It's called mechzik imavash. It looks like cooking. So these are the three things, these are the checklists that we're always going to go through when we're heating food on Shabbos. Is it actually cooking the food item? Number one. Number two, am I at risk of potentially raising the heat source? And number three, does it look like I'm cooking? So the first principle, I guess the most inclusive principle of how to avoid all these things is what we'll call the keep the cooking going principle. Okay? And for this, we will go back to the oven. Okay? Let's go back to the oven.
I think more people want to come around this way.
So, better... yeah. So let's keep the cooking going here. So the first thing that we need to think about, which is what Ray Kraft mentioned a minute ago, is how cooked is the item, right? Are you dealing with a dry item or are you dealing with a wet item? So imagine, let's say we went to raid the fridge here, so I'm sure we would find two different kinds of items. You have schnitzel, so that's going to be very dry. And then you have cholent. So let's look at this cholent in here.
Do you want to take it out and then show it
from
there?
Take that for a second.
Okay, here.
Let's take it out. Do we have...
Can you look at it while it's cooking?
No, you can't lift the lid.
So taking off the lid is less of a problem than putting back on the lid while it's still cooking.
You could just stick it on this thing.
So, here we go. I pull off my cholent and I look in it and I say, wait a second, is that dry or is that liquidy? What would you say?
It's pretty liquidy.
The rabbis have a long discussion about how to determine, so some say that it depends on majority, but even if not, another way of looking at it is there, let's say you have a pan of chicken, but it's not schnitzel, it's let's say roast chicken with sauce. So if the sauce is a significant independent entity, like sometimes people serve it right, like in a little bowl on the side, so then you have to worry about reheating that liquid. Or brisket if it has a lot of gravy in it. Exactly. So that's the first question that Rabbi Kraft said, is we have to think about whether or not it's dry or it's wet. So that's the first thing. But the rabbi said, well, look, we're not worried that, you know, if she's spying through the window or if you're looking at it here in the kitchen, we're not worried if you're going to keep the cooking going. What I mean by that. So here's my cholent. The cholent is on the crock pot from before Shabbos, right? Friday night, it's in the Shabbos crock pot. And again, most preferred is I put the foil in there and I put the little foil on the knobs. Now, Friday night, let's say we have a bunch of boys over and we're going to serve them cholent after the meal when everybody else went to sleep. But you want the cholent also for tomorrow. So the problem is if I take it out... The second that I take it out, wait a second, if I put it back in,
do I now run into the problem of, well, it looks like I'm cooking on Shabbos? So the rabbi said, look, you have to think about it the following way. The first one is, Oda Biyoto, are you still holding it? So if I'm holding the cholent, and I can still put it down on the thing, but I'm holding it in my hand. So clearly, anybody who's watching me saw that I picked it out of the oven, I put it down on the table, but I held it. That's the first qualification. The second one is, it's in your mind. I intend, when I take it off, to put it back on. So I'm keeping the cooking going by physically holding on to it while it's on the table, and I keep in my mind that I'm going to put it on. Oda biyado, it's called while in your hand, it's in your mind, and when I put it back, it must be covered. Why does it have to be covered? Not of concern number one. Covering it doesn't matter whether you're cooking. Concern number two. Right? Concern number two. If I'm going to put this down, but there's no covering on it, okay, right there's no covering on it, there's nothing. I put it back on for Friday night. We're still concerned that I might adjust the heat. Concern number two, right? Concern number one is cooked. It has to be fully cooked. There's no way you can ever put anything back on if it's not fully cooked. If it's dry, then you're very good. If it's moist, as long as it's still hot, you haven't gone below. It's not cold, so then you're not reheating it. So the cholent, when I take it off, it's still hot. It's very hot. So then I can put it back on from a concern number one is cooking. Concern number two is, am I going to stir it? Well, like that it will, but if it's covered in foil, then I won't. And then what was concern number three?
How it looks.
So this is what the rabbis distinguishes between what's called tocho, inside, and al gabav, on top of it. When I open the oven, if they're spying on me from the outside, I open the oven, I stick something in, and I enclose it. So that looks like cooking. But if I put something on top, certainly if I put it on something like this, so it doesn't look like I'm cooking. I put it on top of something. It has to be on top. So there is a discussion about whether crock pots are inside or on top. The majority opinion is to be lenient and to consider them on top.
So if you have a pot in the oven.
Yes, great. So here I am. I have my pot in the oven. I'm not going to put my shoe in the oven. But let's say we had a pot in the oven. So the first thing that I'm going to think about is, how cooked is it? Is it wet or is it dry? So if it's dry and it's fully cooked, so far, cleared hurdle number one. Let's say it's wet, it's a liquid item, but it's hot, still, I'm good, I'm in the clear. I take it out, first thing I'm thinking is, okay, I'm planning to put it back. That's number one. Number two is I hold on to it. I scoop it out and I serve. Now, I'm not going to put it back in the oven because that's inside. But if I have a covered surface like this, then I'd be able to put it back on top. Okay? So those are the main things to think about when we talk about reheating food on Shabbos.
I have a share.
Yes.
My children has items that I have to get out.
Right.
And there is always a question, and there are all kinds of answers. For example, I have a plastic bag, not something like that, but like wheat.
Yes, okay.
So I have to open the pot to get the wheat. I have to get the eggs to peel them. But I don't want to get the whole pot out and get everything cold while I'm doing that. And I have my, you know, it's not exactly kishka, it's something else. And I want to get it out of the foil.
So we won't criticize you for that. Huh? You can keep going. Sorry.
So the question is it okay that I take all that stuff to prep and leaving the rest of it in the oven and then take the stuff out?
So tell me again, how are you taking it out while the thing is in the oven? You take the whole thing out of the oven?
No. You put
your hand in the oven.
I open the pot.
Oh, you pull the thing out and you keep it.
I leave it in the oven.
While it's in the oven?
Wait, it's still in the oven or you pull the tray out?
I just pulled the tray out.
So now it's not in the oven.
That's out of the oven.
Oh, okay.
Right, think about it.
Sometimes
when I'm here,
and then I get drunk.
Got it. So when I'm here, I'm not in the oven anymore.
Okay,
I'm out.
Got you.
I'm out.
So this is what I do. I open the oven.
I'm not going to say anything about what you do.
Meaning, okay. So this, can you do?
I should ask a rabbi. What I would say is the following.
I thought that's what they were.
I would. What's that?
No, we came to cook, not to ask.
Right. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I would say once it comes out of the oven, it's best not to put it back in the oven. Because.
So let it cool off.
if you cover it,
put it on
with
on
the top,
on the blech.
Or you can put it on the top, on the blech. So let's run through a couple of any other questions, comments, or observations.
What if you didn't pull the drawer out? What if she just? What if the pot was in there?
On the lower shelf.
She's got all the shelves. So she's on the lower shelf. So then she, if she.
So here's the other problem.
She's holding the lid.
The other problem you're going to have is like this. When you uncover the pot, you now have the lid in your hand. Now you have an uncovered pot in your oven, so it's on the fire. The oven is on. The second that I take the lid and recover the pot, what am I doing? I'm really cooking. Because by covering... What's that?
I'm really increasing.
Bingo. That's what I'm doing. I'm increasing the heat. So it's very problematic.
But I pre-cook it before
right.
I put it
it's
in the oven.
Technically speaking, if it's totally cooked, so then there's no problem of vishal akhar vishal. I would say MP, which is what we'll refer to as most preferred is take the chalent out and then leave it on a flat heating surface. This way you don't have to worry about the putting it back in. Now there are a couple of exceptions, other ways about doing things. Now first is, let's say you have a very unusual heating source. Some of us went to school or lived in apartments when we were younger that had radiators. Those things could get really hot.
Yes.
However, have you ever seen anyone normal, and I don't refer to college students, normal people, does anyone normally cook on a radiator?
No.
No. So if Gladys Kravitz is spying on you and she sees you take a pot of food and put it on a radiator, she's not thinking that you're cooking. And do you ever have to worry that you're going to be turning up you're going to call the super to turn up the heat on the radiator? No, you don't have to worry about that. So let's say you're in a place with a radiator or another kind of unusual heat source. If you have something that's dry, you have schnitzel. Best way to heat up schnitzel if you're living, I don't know, in Washington Heights and you have a really chazak radiator is put it straight on the radiator. Right?
Sure. But I didn't have
all right. Maybe it's only the guys who were... So that's one option. Because again, think about going through the process. I'm worried about my three steps. I'm worried about the cooking. I'm worried about handling the fire. And I'm worried about looking like cooking. Similarly, so there's a more of a complex discussion about this, but this is also permitted. If let's say this is my heat source, and I'm just going to put the pot next to the heat source, not on top of it. So it'll warm up, but am I worried that I'm going to handle the heat source? No, because the heat source doesn't really affect directly the thing that's going on next to it. Another discussion, which is really not so practical, but theoretically, Rabbi Kraft mentioned before that the threshold for heating has to be somewhere, let's assume that on the strict end it's close to 117 degrees. So if you had some kind of heating source that was less than 120 degrees, so then that would also be permitted because you're not really going to heat it up very much. That's not so practical because to use a heat source, like on our oven at home, the lowest setting that it goes is 170. So that's not so practical, but theoretically that could come out. But here is probably the most common way of avoiding these issues, which is here I am. This is my chalent pot. This happens in our house all the time. Here's my chalent pot. Don't burn myself. Here's my chalent pot. It's cooking Shabbos day. So, and now I pulled out a tray of schnitzel from the fridge. Wait a minute. How can I pull a tray of schnitzel out from the fridge? Until now, we have said that you always have to take it off, hold on to it, and then put it back on. How could you ever take something out of the fridge?
What do you mean? Why?
It's cold.
It's cold, but don't I have my problem that I'm going to start adjusting the flame?
That's already cooked.
It's cooked.
Isn't it dry?
It's dry. That only solves problem number one. If, let's say, imagine like this. I have my schnitzel in the fridge. I take it out of the fridge, and I have an oven. I have a stove that's running with a blech. But I'm still concerned. When I take it out of the fridge, I'm not using the theory that we said before of keeping the cooking going. I just took it out of the fridge. I can't just take it out of the fridge and put it straight down here to heat it up.
room temperature.
So you're reheating.
So what do I do? I have to now, I got to think through my three things. So the rabbi said, wait a second. Now, this is primarily for Ashkenazim. The rabbi said, wait a second. Even if you have a blech, the blech says, I can take it off and put it back. It doesn't say I could take it out of the fridge and put it on the blech. Right? Because it's still in the process, it's very close to cooking. So the rabbi said, well, wait a second. Has anybody ever cooked anything on top of a full challah pot?
No.
Have you ever cooked anything from scratch? Oh, thank you.
No.
Thank you so much. You've never cooked anything like that.
On top of a challah pot?
Yes.
No.
You've
like
never.
An egg, like crack an egg, they talk about eating
right. Has anybody ever done that? Have you ever baked a banana cake by leaving it there like that?
No.
So the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, Rav Avram Abelu Gombiner in the 16th, end of the 16th, early 17th century, says, wait a second. He says, that, no one cooks on that. If you take something out of the fridge, you're not allowed to put it straight here, according to a majority of opinions, but you may put it here.
It's not. So when we think about that.
It is actually in our house we do it all the time.
Yeah, we do too.
Yeah.
But
and the hot water urn.
And the urn, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not so warm though. There's not that much room.
Right.
So,
like a
muffin.
You need to build a thing that goes along the side, little pockets around.
That's one.
For our show, when we have a kitchen.
Yes.
So then there's one.
Hold on a second. So here's another option. They're not putting on the challah pot, but think about it. Conceptually, again, the first thing we got to cover is make sure that we're not cooking it. It's fully cooked dry schnitzel, so that you've covered. We're still worried about that it shouldn't be concerned that maybe you're going to adjust the flame and that it shouldn't look like cooking. But let's say you have an apparatus that has no adjustable heating element.
Like a hot box, you mean?
Just a hot plate. A hot plate. I take this hot plate. What's that? Let's finish this loop for everybody, then we'll come back to that in a second. Yeah. If I have a non-adjustable heat source, so concern number two is not a concern anymore. Because I can't adjust it even if I wanted to.
Unless
you mean the electrical plate?
Yes.
Some of them have a knob.
But let's say theoretically you have a hot plate that has no knobs on it. Okay. So now I've cleared hurdle number one. I cleared hurdle number two because it doesn't have any knobs. And then here's hurdle number three. Has anyone ever cooked on a hot plate? No. So many rabbis, not all, but many rabbis say, let's say I have a hot plate set up right over here. And then someone's staring in at the window and they see you take a bowl and put it on this hot plate. Would anybody think that you're cooking? Is that messy? Does it look like cooking? No. If you were really cooking, you'd be over here. Not over here. So this is the second major avenue that many are of the opinion that if you have a hot plate, a designated hot plate, that's not for cooking. You never cook on it. No one ever cooks on it. It would be permitted to heat up on Shabbos day dry food that was completely cooked on a hot plate. If it's not adjustable, you're totally safe. Let's say it is adjustable. What would you need to do? You need to put a cover on the whole surface to remind you not to adjust it. That would be a second avenue. These are two avenues of taking something straight out of the fridge. The truth is the radiator works even just taking it out of the fridge because it's totally... So just conceptually, the first area that we talked about to keep the cooking going is when something is on the fire, you're taking it out and you want to put it back. It doesn't work to put it inside the oven. And this is... I'll have the handout for you afterwards. This is what they point out. The Starkey were the ones who actually engineered Sabbath mode oven. This was, I think it was originally with KitchenAid, which is, I think, owned by Whirlpool. In 1997, Starkey, which is from Baltimore, which we're very proud of, they got together with this company and they came up with something called Sabbath mode. The challenge is that Sabbath mode is a little bit, I don't want to say misleading, but they point out that all food must be fully cooked and placed in the oven before Shabbos. No food, cooked or non-cooked, may be placed in the oven on Shabbos to rewarm or cook. This is true regarding ovens as well as warming drawers. That's their opinion regarding warming drawers, even if it's on Sabbath mode. That's, I think, probably the
Sabbath
most...
really should be called a Yom Tov mode.
It should really be called Yom Tov mode. It's a little bit of a misnomer. Sabbath mode does not mean you could put food in the oven on Shabbos. Why not?
It means I turn my light off. If I put on Sabbath mode, which I could do for you, the light doesn't go on.
Right.
That's really bad.
But why can't you? Think about it. Why can't you put the food in the oven on Sabbath?
Because
it looks... A, because you could adjust it. And
still adjust the fire.
You could still adjust the fire. But if the Sabbath mode overrode that, you would still have a different problem, which is... It looks like you're cooking. If somebody was spying on you, they would say it looks like you're cooking. That's
so
why the
close the windows.
Right. That's why the star case says you don't put food into a Sabbath mode oven on a Sabbath.
Huh.
Okay. So now, one more, another suggestion, which is... Yeah, now back to the song. Yes.
When you pull the knobs.
What do you mean, pull the knobs?
Take the knobs.
You rip them out. Yeah.
They just come off.
But can you still adjust it with your fingers?
You still
have to. I don't know, let's see.
If at all it's possible, you're going to start
the nose. Those come off over there.
Potentially, it's. So then you would really need to do. You would put. You just put a layer of tinfoil on the top. That's your blessing to remind you. So now here's one other suggestion that many rabbis are in favor of as well. Not everybody, but many. Not everybody, but many. So imagine, here's my blessing. And we pointed out that I can't take cold food from my fridge, my cold schnitzel from the fridge, and put it straight onto my blech, because it's not continuing the cooking. It still looks a little bit like cooking, even though it's covered. That's the difference. When I'm, if you're spying on me, if I'm at my range here doing my thing, so it looks like I'm cooking. It does not look like I'm cooking if I put something on the top of a cholent pot or on the top of an urn, right?
But so, if I take the pot from the oven, can I put it on the blech?
If you're still holding it,
yes,
yes you can, because okay. You're continuing the cooking. So that would be the answer to your issue from before,
right.
Is this, take it out,
put it on the blech,
take out the stuff. Oh, but some are of the following opinion. They say like this, this is my range. I normally cook on the range, and I have a blech on it, but that still doesn't really take away from looking like cooking. But let's say I do this. Now, what have I done? So some rabbis say you did nothing. You just have a weird blech. But other rabbis say, look, what you really have is a double blech, an unusual blech. You have a blech, which is a Yiddish term just for the covering, but then you have a pot. It's a cheap pot, no disrespect. It's a very cheap pot that's upside down. So I have a pot on top of a covered fire. So many rabbis say, like, that's not normal. That's totally abnormal. And therefore, if I take something, cold schnitzel out of the, I take my noodles, my sesame noodles out of the fridge, if I put it on there, that would also be permitted. Why? Number one, it's fully cooked. Number two, I have my blech, and I would have my knobs covered, so no one's going to think about adjusting it. And then number three, does this look like cooking? Would anybody in their right mind cook on that?
No.
The answer is no.
What about the neighbors spying?
Even if they were spying, they would be thinking, I can't get my head around that. Okay? So now, there is a little bit of controversy around warming drawers. Because on the one hand, warming drawers are not used for cooking. On the other hand, warming drawers are inside. When you put something in a warming drawer, I don't know if you have a warming drawer.
I don't, because it's a controversy.
So it is a controversy. So there are different opinions among different rabbis. Some are of the suggestion that if you're going to use the warming drawer, then you would then have to go back to making a blech. So you would have to cover the entire interior of the warming drawer with tinfoil, assuming that it's not a problem of inside of tocho, because people don't usually cook in a warming drawer. So that's a little bit of a tricky story. But
an issue with, like, hot money?
So depending, so hatmana is also a tricky question. Usually we assume hatmana, which is a topic that we did not discuss tonight, which is called encasing. There's a separate rabbinic restriction against encasing. It's likely it's not a hatmana because it doesn't actually touch the walls of your pot. It's just in the dome, but it's not actually touching it from the side. So to summarize, anything you left out we want to put on there? So to summarize, we kind of walked through the pre-Shabbos, you know, as Rabbi Kraft talked about how you set up the system. You know, when Shabbos starts, you're thinking about how cooked is my food? Do I need a covering on the fire or do I not need a covering on the fire? As long as it's not fully cooked, it's most preferred to have a covering. But especially if you're Ashkenazi, if it's something that's going in your oven, it's oftentimes not practical. So then you have to think about the suggestions about how to set it up appropriately for the knobs, ideally. But as long as it's, you know, significantly cooked, one-third cooked, you're okay. Then you think about, on Shabbos, going through those steps in your mind. Number one, wait a second. Is it dry or is it wet? Am I continuing the cooking? Like you said, I'm pulling it off and then I'm going to put it back on. You know, I just want to serve a little bit, but then I want to put it back on the blech. So I got to keep it in my hands, not forget that I want to put it back on, and then put it back on. Now, this is an oversimplification. There are many, many permutations within this. Let's say the power goes out. Let's say I took it out by accident. I forgot and I left it on the... So a lot of leniencies are built in, but this is kind of like the most preferred way of going about this process. Any questions, comments, or observations before we wrap up? That's right.